Hello, and welcome to the Zeitgeist 19 podcast, curating the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Piriya-Cohen and Elizabeth Zhivkova.
This winter solstice, a moment of stillness and deep listening, we are honored to share something truly special with you. Today's episode is a recording of the As Above, So Below panel held during One Ocean Week Milan and graciously hosted by the One Ocean Foundation. It is a gathering of voices that remind us that wisdom does not only live in books or laboratories, but in memory and in the living world itself. You will hear from Johanna Maggi and Anahita Babae, whose practices are rooted in indigenous wisdom and ancestral ways of knowing. Together, they speak of ancient traditions that understand the world as an interconnected whole, where sky and sea, body and spirit, human and more than human, are in constant dialogue. At the heart of this conversation are the whales, gentle, gigantic beings who carry the songs of the ocean and the memory of deep time. They invite us to listen differently, to remember our place within the web of life, and to move with greater reverence, humility, and care. As we mark the turning of the light on this winter solstice, may this episode offer a moment of reflection, reconnection, and quiet awe, an invitation to align what is within us with what surrounds us, above, below, and within. Good morning, everyone, and happy Ocean Week. Welcome to As Above, So Below, a talk that lives within our current podcast series, born from a collaboration between One Ocean Foundation and Zeitgeist 19, a project uniting art, science, technology, in service of planetary well-being. Today, we will journey both above and below the surface, exploring the visible and unseen as we dive into the extraordinary practices of two land and ocean defenders whose work bridges worlds, traditions, and ways of knowing. It is a true honor to welcome to the stage two remarkable women, Johanna Maggi, a holistic coach and advocate of indigenous wisdom, whose work reconnects us to ancestral knowledge and embodies awareness, and Anahita Babae, an artist, independent filmmaker, and anti-whaling activist, whose creative and courageous practice gives voice to the ocean and its gentle giants. We will begin with a short introduction from our speakers themselves, as they share more about their backgrounds and what has brought them here with us today.
My name is Johanna Maggi Hauksdóttir, and I'm from Iceland, born and raised in Iceland, very proudly, surrounded by the ocean that we can never go in because it's just so cold. So it remained as this mysterious ice-cold water and with beings and creatures. I love how Icelandic people, we have so much fantasy being isolated there in the north, in the cold, in all the weathers, that we make so many fantasies about nature. And so being raised like this, the love for nature and just the connection to nature from my childhood is one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. And I can see that now as a parent, and traveling around the world, working a lot with indigenous peoples and different communities, and being a mom now, you know, my passion really evolved. The turning point was for me when I was a mother and I was walking with my sons in a stroller. I was actually in Barcelona and I was looking at, you know, I lived in Africa before as well, so helping children in Africa and, you know, just seeing all this. I went to Syria during, you know, to help women and children in difficulty. So it was just like traveling the world and opening always more and more my mind. And I thought, wow, how can it be that it's a privilege that I tuck my children in a safe bed and I give them good food and I'm able to give them love, you know. And so I thought this should not be a luxury. This should be for every mother. And it's just like this, my passion for environment and justice just took on a whole new level because I'm worried greatly for the future of my children. And when I look around and see what is happening in the world, I just do not understand the leaders we have chosen for ourselves all around the world. It looks like they don't have children or they don't have grandchildren. So I just started to really think like, but how can this be happening? How are we living in a world so that it's so clear? Because when I talk to my children about, you know, everything I do and, you know, I share the information, you know, I want to raise my sons. I take it as a really big responsibility. Two young men in the world today, you know, I want them to know the women and men are equal, you know, all these things. And I want to, because children are like sponges, you know, they are so much more smarter than we ever give them really credit for. And I see that in them and I look at their companions. So it's just, you know, the passion and love I have for the future of my kids and all their companions. So it's not just the love for mine, it's for all of our children, you know. And so then after, you know, traveling like this a lot, and my friend was actually telling me about whales in Iceland. I went to Iceland for a few days with my sons. And she was like, oh, you should meet this girl, Anahita. She was talking for whales, and she's doing moved here to Iceland. And I was just like, what? She moved to Iceland to fight for whales? And so I was like, please tell me more. And I was like, do you think I can meet her? I want to help her out. And the boys as well. And so she was like, yes, of course. And like 2 days later, we met. It was supposed to be a meeting for an hour, and I think it lasted for like 6 or 7 hours. And I thought, who is helping you, you know? You're moving here in Iceland. Are Icelandic people helping you? And she was like, yeah, I mean, not so. So I just went full force, like, you know, guys, come on. This is so obvious. And so I'm learning more and more about the whales. I honestly, you know, I mean, we are non forever students, so I didn't know the seriousness of this matter until I met her. And so me and the boys joined her full force, you know, just this is unacceptable. And my sons just looked at me like, Mom, but if we know that this is so important, just stop it. Why aren't they not stopping it? And the fact is that Icelandic people are against whaling. This is not something that I grew up with deep in my culture. I never had whale meat. And so it's just, it's this myth, and it's not even being really consumed there unless it's for tourists. So Iceland has been fighting against whaling for many, many, many years. But thanks to Anahita and many other people, you know, it went to a whole new level. So yeah, I guess the reason why I ended up all the way here today, you know, is just the love and gratitude, you know, for the planet, for indigenous peoples as well, to just see how they dedicate every single day of their life, you know, their days go by the clock of nature and their connection to it. And then therefore they are never lost, you know, they never have to go on a mission to find themselves like we do. So, yeah.
Anahita, can you tell us a bit more about yourself, your journey, your work, and what has brought you here with us today?
Yes, of course. My name is Anahita Sahar Babai. I'm born and raised in Iran, and it's so interesting that the name of the, today's conversation is As Above, So Below. As Above, So Below is a concept in Hermetism and in alchemy, and my country, Iran, is the birthplace of alchemy. So As Above, So Below is the core concept of alchemy. And growing up in Iran, it is as well a core concept in our poetry, our literature, our language is shaped around it. And what it means is that whatever is outside is also inside. The word God in Persian is self. That's what we believe. If you look inside, then you will find all the answers. Therefore, As Above, So Below has also is the core concept of all of my works, all of my philosophy, the way that I look at the world, and the world, the way that I look at activism as well. I believe every war that is outside is the result of a battle unresolved inside of ourselves. And every beauty that we see outside is a reflection of the beauty that we have inside. And if you want to change outside, you have to change inside. What happens with the art that I'm doing, what happens with the activism that I'm doing, I'm not sure which one is changing, which am I creating the art or the art is creating me. I think as I grow and as I learn about myself, the reflection of it will be the change outside. There's a huge philosophical question of so many organizations. We all face so many horrified news every day, and we ask, how can we be a change? And I think the answer is simple. Then just stand with the truth of yourself and set an example. I think leading by setting an example and living the dreams and the truth of yourself is the only way to go. If you imagine people as a herd of animals that needs a shepherd, I don't think we are doing it in the right way. So what you will see more and more in my art and in my activism is that I would put myself as the earth that is suffering, and I would put myself as one person. Like, what can one individual do? And I can use my mind, I can use the power of connecting with people, but at the same time, there is something that this body can do, and how far can I go with it? And yeah, so how, if I want to say, I started with saving bunnies from labs, and I ended up going to Iceland and saving animals, of course, but I would not be able to stay there if I haven't met Johanna. Johanna just took a leap of faith on helping me. She opened so many doors. She introduced me to so many people. Basically, she did the magic that I really needed there. It was a miracle that we managed to save 250 whales per year in the last 3 years. We only lost 25, and it could be so much more. So yeah, I can call that. I can say we won.
Thank you both for these truly inspiring introductions. It is deeply moving to witness how your collaboration has grown into a meaningful and enduring friendship. As we've heard, both of you are devoted anti-whaling activists. You brought to life the beautiful and poetic film Let's End Whaling, starring Johanna and directed by Anahita. When I first watched it, it nearly brought me to tears. I'd like to begin our conversation with these psychomagical beings, the whales. You're both actively involved in whale conservation. Iceland is one of the three countries, alongside Norway and Japan, that has allowed commercial whaling in recent years. How does this make you feel, and why are whales so vital to our ecosystems? You conclude your film with a quote by Ralph Chami, which leads me to my final question: what is the true value of a whale? Maori indigenous peoples believe whales are our ancestors. How do you relate to this understanding?
Well, it's quite incredible how whales manage in all indigenous communities all over the world to take a big part. You know, there is a story at one moment or the other where a whale appears. And so whales are highly spiritual beings, you know. They are gentle, gigantic giants, and their songs and the way they play in the ocean, they move the nutrients, you know, they go so far, they go so deep. And now in Hawaii, you can go and swim with them. There is a man who takes sick people to swim with whales because they say that their songs, the vibration that makes in the water, vibrates throughout your body and has extreme healing powers. So it's infinite what it's coming up. You know, they are also, they represent peace. You know, they represent spirituality and connection to your ancestors. So they tell a story, you know, they get also to be so old. And so you know, that for me, it's really, really, really remarkable. And, you know, I work a lot with indigenous people in the Amazon, and we met an indigenous man from Hawaii, Ryan, and they were talking, you know, like how beautiful it is to see them work together, because the corals, they are so important, I mean, more important than the Amazons. But, you know, to see two indigenous leaders like that come together and talk about how beautiful it is when the land meets the sea, and how they need to be entwined to work, to create. You know, they just do so much for the planet.
I think what you mentioned is really important. We need to save the whales for the sake of the whales. As there's a quote from Star Wars that say, if any aliens come to planet, we always think that they're going to communicate with us. No, they're going to communicate with the whales as the most intelligent creature on the planet Earth. We have to save them for the sake of how important they are as species that are sharing this planet with us. But at the same time, when I started to save animals, for me, of course, all animals matter equally. But if you want to save mass of animals, you have to start with something that they called keystone species. It means that there are animals that if they go extinct or if they die, there's a galaxy of creatures that goes down with them. The foundation of our biodiversity depends on keystone species, that whale is one of them. Funny, bees are also one of them. They are ecosystem engineers. We will not survive without them. And just imagine how the whole agriculture will collapse if we don't have bees. The same thing in the ocean will happen, because whales are going oceans to oceans and moving nutrients from one place to another place, and they poop. And the poop is like gold. Now we know it's so important for the wealth of the ocean, for regenerating planktons that are creating the oxygen. So we say that every second breath that we take, we owe it to the whales. And you would think, that's what I thought. I thought it's so easy to say, duh, we have to stop killing the whales. Not only that, we have to start protecting them until we have decimated this number of the whales after industrial level. It's down to 90%. We killed 90% of the whale population. And we have to bring it back, but no. It sounds like a death sentence to humanity. We are killing the creatures that our lives now depend on it. That's how important they are.
Thank you both so much for reminding us that ecocide is actually a genocide, and that we are profoundly interconnected. Our very existence depends on the lives of these beings. We will now watch and listen to a film by Anahita, inspired by Icelandic mythology.
In the ancient saga called Ketilsaga Heims, a whale with human eyes comes to the rescue of Ketil, the protagonist, who has been lost at sea in a terrible storm. The whale leads Ketil to a friendly shore and uses his power to calm the raging waves. Whales do have that power, indeed. The movement of the marine life in the oceans is equal to all the movement caused by wind, waves, and tides combined, breathing life into the waters around the world. Our lives are tied together, whales and ours, far beyond the simple notion of eat or be eaten.
We will now move forward to our next topic. Johanna, you've just returned from the Amazon with your children, where you visited Jurenka Tasurenci, founded by the indigenous Ashashinka leader and shaman Benki Piako. Why is educating children in this way? By instilling values through ancestral knowledge and the teachings of elders so crucial? In a sense, how do we move forward by going backward through indigenous knowledge?
When I first started to, 10 years ago, I started to work like started this path, let's say, that opens itself to me slowly by slowly. But when I go in an indigenous community and I look at the children there, they are just so whole, you know, they are grounded. And then you look at the teenagers, and then you look at the people in their 20s, and so go on. They just, you know, there are no masks, no capes. They are just themselves, and they know who they are. You know, there is no arguing and fighting, and just people work together as a whole. You know, like in Iceland, we say, like, you don't thrive without a good neighbor. You know, so our mentality is, you know, is my neighbor doing okay? I smiled at the grocery store. Like, I want to go and visit. Like, knock, knock. Hi, I'm Johanna. I'm your new neighbor. I did that both in New York and here in Milano. The people just looked at me, okay, closed the door in my face. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, well, okay. So it's just beautiful. It's so beautiful for me to see, you know, the lineages. You know, the grandparents, they are with, you know, they, everybody spend time together and they pass knowledge on. It's obvious, you know, when I was in labor with my firstborn, I was just, there was a moment that I was like, wait a minute, nobody told me that this was going to hurt so much, you know, and I was thinking about my grandmothers and my aunts, like, why didn't they had many children, why didn't they tell me properly how this was going to go down, because I was not prepared for that amount of pain. But, you know, it was just funny to me that in the moment I thought, wow, we don't pass on knowledge between generations anymore, because now we have the TV. So we used to gather around the fire or in the living room to get warm, to stay all close and talk and share stories and things. But now we are just doing this, and we are just getting more and more disconnected from each other. But also, I often get asked this question, like, how do you reconnect to nature? How do we reconnect to nature? I'm like, that's the problem is right there in the question, because you are nature. You are a part of it. It's not like you're going to go, oh, I'm going to go visit her. I'm going to go out there and reconnect to nature. Just, it's a connection that is never lost. And therefore, you understand the message of the earth. Like, what is the problem out there? What do we need to do better? Oh, we need to plant trees. Like Benki Bianco now, he has planted over 4.5 million trees in the Amazon. And we are working hard and traveling the world with him as well just to raise the knowledge, because he also supports other tribes and other leaders all around the world, not just his. So it's just such an important message. And just seeing my children, you know, we go there in 1 month, I saw them grow so fast. Their eyes were open like this, so full of life, you know, talking to so many different people. You know, they made so many friends, you know, around. And I was like, how are they communicating? You know, they just invented some Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, you know, cocktail, and like so excited, you know. Then they come back here and I see, and it breaks my heart. My younger son is really like not getting it. Like, why I have to go and sit down all these hours every day? Like, he's full of life and curiosity. And I just, it just worries me. I look at indigenous communities and I look at our communities here back home, and I'm just like, you know, I'm obviously going to follow this because people are just better, you know? They're just kind, compassionate. It sounds so easy. So I just don't understand why we cannot live like this. Just give each other a nice smile. You never know what the person you have in front of you is dealing with, how their morning was. So, okay, like, if you wanna, but like, let's just, we live here all together. It's so much better if we are friends. And so looking at indigenous people like that, this is the way I want my children to grow and learn, is with that as a blueprint and doing the best I can to them and me, bring it back into the school and bring it back and sprinkle it around, sharing that story, and then we learn together.
Beautifully said. It's truly inspiring to see how you are instilling these values in your children. I also deeply believe that we must reintegrate play and nature into children's lives, that it is fundamental to their education, their growth, and their sense of belonging in this world. Anita, do you have any comment on this?
Yeah, I've been living also in the north of Scandinavia, I was living with the last indigenous people of Europe, the Sami people, for a year. And I realized that they plan their life around the season, not around the business calendar. The calendar is the weather, where the sun, is it cold? Then I go mentally inside myself, I isolate myself, and I'm gonna get ready for the sun comes out, and then I will be back to life again. I think I just learned what does it mean to be a natural being in this planet when I was living with them, as Johanna explained it so beautifully. And then when I had to come back to Milan to work, I wouldn't understand why it's so uncomfortable now, you know. We just force ourselves because the prophet, you know, the prophet is our God now instead of nature.
Thank you, Anahita. We can truly say that you are an artivist, someone who weaves socio-political engagement deeply into their creative practice. You are not simply telling a story, you are fully embodied in it, body and soul. You chained yourself to a crow's nest of a whaling vessel for 33 hours, an act of profound commitment and courage. Can we say that artists are the change makers of today, and can creativity itself be understood as a powerful tool for change?
Yes, I totally believe that not only creativity is a tool for change, but it's probably the only tool for change. Going back again to alchemy and as above, so below, our subconscious doesn't understand words. Our subconscious talks in pictures. That's why in alchemy we have forms, and we have like pods, and you cook yourself into a pod, or you're in a lead state, or you're in a misty state, you know, because that's how your subconscious understands. Subconscious doesn't understand the word depression or, you know, anxiety and all of these things. And I think if we want to change, or if we want to ask people or inspire them to change, we have to talk to the back of their head, not the front of their head. We have to help them dream or imagine, because if we can't dream of a better world, there's no way that we're gonna walk toward it. What bad news brings is fear and a guilt and a shame that you're not able to do something. What dreaming brings is a lot of motivation and happiness, and like free volunteering to make a better world, rather than, you know, just being forced out of fear. So I do believe that creativity is the only way. And yeah, and what was your first question? Was that, yeah, I chained myself to the crow's nest. I think when I arrived in Iceland, I knew nobody before I also met Johanna. It was just me trying to do something. You will see in the photos later that I just put some blood in my hands and I just held my hand in front of the whaling station when they were just like cutting open this giant whale. And that was, it was just like, okay, I'm going to perform something, something symbolic, that I'm here with this white dress, with this feminine energy, that like a mother energy, that I want to save the animals here. And then I think my last performance was just to chaining myself to the wall. I think that was also just like an art performance, as that we've done everything, every possible way. We've taken legal acts, we've taken most of the majority of people in Iceland raised their voice that we do not want to be part of this, we don't want Iceland to be a whaling nation. And nothing worked. Still, one man with a lot of political power won over the majority of Icelandic people. So then I remain with the question that, oh, I still have one body. I can throw that this mass of a body in front of the whaling vessels. And we saved something around five more whales with 33 hours. They took away my water, the police, so I couldn't physically stay longer. I was planning for a week, but yeah, I mean, we do. And it's inspired lots of people. So that's what best we can hope.
It's incredible how we continue to show that every single action truly matters. Johanna, as a holistic coach, can you share with us how we can slow down in our daily lives? Could you give some examples of small practical actions you've integrated into your own routine? How can we reconnect with nature and cultivate a greater sense of grounding, mindfulness, and conscious living?
I think the first way to reconnect to nature is to remember that you are nature, you know. All how many secrets, and if you go for a walk and if you start your day by walking through some trees and watching the sunrise maybe, how many great ideas do you get on a 15-minute walk, you know? Like, you can be thinking about your life and things come to you in a different way. It's like remembering that you are connected, and there are so many secrets and messages with the birds, with the way the sun came, you know, just to be conscious of your surroundings, you know. And here in Milano, we that live here, I struggle, I don't know about you guys, I'm like 15 years of struggle in Milan, but you know, it's just to remember, notice the trees in our street. Like, do you really know how many trees are in your street? Like, probably not, because when I was asked this question, I was like, oh my God, no, I don't know the trees in my street. So I started like, okay, I need to understand you. So we have a way to connect, like, you know, look up, you know, all these things that we know, you know, we all know. I believe that, you know what is best for you. You know what is best for you, but it's just gaining that faith and the belief that you should have towards yourself. Like, you are amazing the way you are, and you are amazing the way you are. Also, just to say about women, you know, women have an intuition. Being a mother or not, having birthed a child or not, that doesn't matter, because you are still a woman and you have something extremely gifted from the gods to bring life from that dimension into this one here. Whether you actually do it or not, but you have that within you. And so therefore, you have this gut feeling and instinct. You know, that is a superpower of a woman. And so how sad it is to me to see how many women are totally unaware of their own power. And they are afraid to connect with it. And they are afraid to connect to their beauty and so on. And then now as the man, you know, I have four brothers. I have two sons, and my brother has three sons, so I'm just like surrounded by men, and it's amazing. And I see also how men are not aware of their masculine strength. What actually is the quality of being a man, and how sacred is the union between the masculine and the feminine? But we are meeting really out of alignment and trying to build relationships and families, but no, we are not in our full power. And I believe that coming again back to nature, back to our grandparents and our ancestors, connecting to what actually brought us all the way here. I mean, we have never had so much access to knowledge and had it as good as we do today, but we are sicker than ever. You know, we are just mentally not doing okay as a race, the human species. And so connecting back to nature, dropping into our heart, you know, live women, leading with that gut feeling, believe in yourself, see or pull your beauty forward. You don't have to stick it on your face, and, you know, it's not external, it's internal, you know, be who you are. It's finding that in your practices, you know, waking up in the morning, and it just all it takes, it's a breath. Where am I from? Who are my ancestors? Who is my grandmother? You know, what did she do? Who is my mother? And who am I? You know, and men do that in their lineage. And just believing in yourself, believing in nature. And together, I refuse, you know, I want to feed the positivity. Because once we feed the anxiety and the fear, then that is going to be a stronger force in the world. And it's everywhere. And it's so easy to feed that force. But we need to feed the sunlight and the bees and the whales and each other and the children. You know, all the children. We need to take a better care of them. And we need to take a better care of the animals. So it's... I should stop talking and pass. But yeah, that would be it. Anahita, you, with a background from Iran, do you have any comments on amplifying female voice and, in general, reconnecting to nature and oneself?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what I was telling my therapist. Like, everyone is an activist. Whether we want it or not, there are some activism that you choose, and there's some activism that comes because you're in certain circumstances, you know. I think just being alive during this period of time for every, especially teenager and young people, they are an activist for climate. And born and raised in Iran, I am a feminist. I cannot be anything other than that. And with the rise of woman life freedom that's happening in Iran, more and more I feel that feminine power that is not lost only in women, it's also lost in men, that animus power of fluidity, creativity, power, you know, intuition that Johanna was saying, and union, that these are the power that men has also lost, because the society is forcing them to be rigid and to be tough and to be dominant and not to cry and not to be soft. That's the concept of patriarchy. It means that the dominance of masculine energy, not the dominance of men. And I think with woman life freedom, everyone, also the men in our society at least, are learning more and more what does it mean, because what does it mean, woman and life and freedom, and how important it is for a society to be to have life. You know, like, a society without feminine energy is a dead society. There's no rebirth is happening in it. So yeah, I think I am by force and nature a feminist as well. And I think that the nature is suffering also because of this patriarchal and dominant control that we have over it. We think that they need to serve us endlessly without being damaged. But yeah, I mean, let's say that for a period of history, we were these kids that need the breasts of the mother nature to grow up on our feet, but now we literally sucked it dry. Are we now going to be grown up humanity that is going to take care of our mother, or are we going to see she dies and we die with her?
Absolutely. What dialogues are you hoping to open, and what messages would you most like to convey to your audience? Why storytelling is fundamental for the ocean and for sustaining life on Earth?
I mean, I think just, you know, it says when Anahita, when I met her, she was, you know, fighting so hard and generously, you know, she's just an angel in disguise. You can't see her wings, but she has them, I swear. But, you know, when we started, you know, we joined forces, and I was like, you know, so angry with Icelanders. I was like, come on, it's obvious. We live in this paradise island in the north, overflow of tourists taking pictures and, you know, want to visit it. And I was like, how can it be that, you know, I mean, many places in the world are extremely beautiful, but I don't know, there is something about Iceland in many people's opinion, not just mine. There is just like this pure nature magic. You don't find rubbish anywhere. You know, it's just how we live with nature there. It's, to me, was always like what gave me the most, leaving the country and, you know, 18 to Africa and just being the crazy person that I am. But, you know, Iceland had this. So I thought, how is this being allowed? But so I went around to my family and my grandma, so cute and beautiful. She was like, yeah, I've heard that they sometimes eat the boats whole out there on the sea. And I was like, no, grandma, that is not true. They don't eat boats. It's the other way around. Boats destroy, you know, like. And so after the video campaign that Anahita worked night and day on, and in Iceland with many Icelandic people telling stories about whales and why and how, and, you know, everything changed, like, in a very fast matter of time. People were just like, oh, but I thought, oh, but I didn't know. So telling a story that, you know, catches your attention and telling, you know, it changes faster than, because if you put it on the news, guys, political, da, 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 people just, you know, but this catches attention. It's a story, you hear many reasons why, and, you know, like me, I am not able to study. I was like my kids running away from school all my childhood, so for me to sit and study is not the best, but I am good in other things, you know, and so stories, they reach so broad audience, you know. Everybody likes a good story, and do it in a creative way, you know. It just gives you goosebumps, and it makes you want to say, hey, what can I do? Because that's what story makes you want to change within you, the little that you can. And so that's what I think.
Yeah, and there's a very interesting thing. I mean, you'll see the photos probably later, that there was a day, it was a very emotional day for us when they brought in a whale, a pregnant whale that had a fetus, had a baby that would be born any minute. It was the most mature fetus that was seen. And at the same, exact same day, there was a little orca, a baby orca that was trapped in a part, in a human-made part of the water. And from Reykjavik, from the capital, people were driving all the way there, volunteering to help this kid kind of survive, because there was a story in their childhood. There was a film called Kiko, I don't know if you've seen it, that it goes to Iceland, Iceland saves it basically, and they release it in the waters in Iceland. It's such a beautiful story. So orcas are untouchable. No one can say anything about the orcas, but probably not enough well story was told about fin whales. That's why, and the same day, two different things happens. You try to save something that's not your fault, but there is a deliberate killing that you can do something about it. And that really shows the power of storytelling, I think.
Yeah, indeed. We need a whole new generation of storytellers like you two, helping to awaken a collective consciousness. Before we open the floor to questions and answers with the audience, I'd like to ask you one final question. If you had a magic wand today, what would you change in this world?
Humanity. Easy. Like, you know, what are we doing? We know most of the things we do is wrong, but do we change? No. But, you know, my magic wand would just put love in if everybody had love in their heart, you know, because if you look at your childhood, it's like walking through life in this storytelling mindset, you know, I'm always up to something. You know, thinking about my grandma, how her child was my grandfather, and, you know, and I see how hard it was, at least up there in the north, the weather, being a fisherman, it was tough, you know. Iceland developed so fast in the last years. You know, my grandfather was just living, you know, with a duck and a goat and a sheep and, you know, a horse in his house to stay warm. And so it's crazy how short time ago in Iceland was like this, and in Norway everyone were tall and elegant with shoes and they were wearing like skin things. And so, you know, looking at the childhood, we know how much suffering, but we don't maybe sometimes realize, you know, so being human beings, be nice to one another, to yourself and to your kids, and fish industry, stop fishing, cattle industry, just go stop it. Like, we can stop it. We are taking also the sources that we are making so much money from, we are all stealing it from nature. But when are we going to swap it and look at nature as a most precious, valuable, you know, bank, or however we want to metaphor it, and just leave it be holy and sacred as it is? Why do we have to take stuff anyway? What more do we want to have? How many successful people, like I tell my kids, like, listen, like, go to school with open mind, enjoy, but all the knowledge that you need to find in your life, you won't find it there. You will find it by living your life and believing in who you are. Have passion, have dreams, fail and continue, you know, just, but then we look around at how human beings, how we are all you know, no, have a smaller point of view. No, now it's too big. You need to have a smaller point of view, like be here and like here. So my wish is that. Sorry.
Thank you, Johanna.
As you can hear, I'm very worried for the future of our kids.
If I had a magic wand, I think I heard this quote from Gloria Steinem, feminist, American feminist, that she said, the moment, I'm praying for that moment that we all wake up one day and we realize we are linked, not ranked. And I would really put that notion in everyone's mind if I could, that one day you wake up and you realize that we are linked, all of us, and we are not ranked. And then everything will be solved, you know, like every good thing that I put outside to this world is going to be linked into everyone and everything, and every bad thing that I do, it's going to affect me eventually. I think that's literally the wish that I have. And the concept of the unity, as above, so below, we always go back to that. It's the same concept, yeah.
Thank you so much. I mean, I cried twice. So, great. And also, I need to make a joke because I met Shirin Ishat the other day, and I was mesmerized by her tiny lady, probably 35 kilos, with the power of a, you know, the biggest emotional energy I felt in years. Now you arrive, another lady from Iran, you know, tall as a giraffe, so fabulous, same power. So I think that Iran has this alchemy in its women, you know, women of Allah is her art. I think you are one of them, not for Allah, but for, you know, what it means, all of us. So I have one question as a joke. What the hell are you doing in Milan? This is the least natural place I lived in my whole life. So I'm fully Italian. I was born on, you know, by the sea on a tiny village, and I lived in many, many countries. But, you know, and this is the least natural place. So I try to remove myself from here. And I don't have so much drive that you have. I'm inspired by it. So what do you do here? Why you choose to live here? And the third point is, I'm an international lawyer. I write constitutions, so I write international treaties. And the reason why I'm here is because of art. It is so important, the storytelling you mentioned, because as a humans, we learn through stories. From our ancestors, the ancestral learning comes from a story. Primitive people, the first people that developed words, developed knowledge and saved themselves because they could tell a story about how to survive in hunting, about how to praise for the gods of nature. Storytelling is what is the origin of our evolution in our mind and in our species. Without storytelling, we're nothing. Without storytelling, we don't have a meaning. And the quest for meaning is what makes people so lost. Like Johanna said, people try to find meaning in what is not there, instead of inside and instead of what is a true meaning. So let's go back to art and let's go back to real core values like you do. I do it much less, obviously, but this is why I'm inspired by that. I'm drawn to that. And I think it will give a lot of meaning to people that clearly now children do not find it in money, do not find it in injustice, and could find it in here. You know, I'm a cold-blooded lawyer, despite I'm Italian, redhead, and Toscan. I cannot be cold-blooded in any, no cell of my body is cold-blooded. But, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I establish treaties, and, you know, it can be any kind of thing. And I tell you, all the law that we make on nature, is it drawn to men? We should stop doing this. This is an active point of take-home for me and for all of us. The law on nature and the law on animal preservation should not be what men cannot do. Where our freedom to do is restrained to protect nature. We should actively say, what is our right and duty to do to protect animals, to respect nature? It's not written anywhere that this art is human art. This art is nature Earth, and we live in there together with other people and with other human beings. Now we're discussing about writing treaties about the right of AI. AI is a non-living being. I want to write international treaties on the right of living, non-human living beings as entitled to rights, which are not restriction from men to abuse them. It's what we must do to respect them. This is the mission of art. This is the mission I will take back as a lawyer and through the power I have in institutions, but we should inspire by that, because storytelling and image are stronger than anything else. Art is not ours. Art is nature's. And I think we forget that.
Nice. I think I don't know how to answer that question, because every time that I see her, she goes like, what are we doing in Milan?
I ask myself this question every day for 15 years, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I learned a lot from Milan. I'm an immigrant, and because I chained myself to the whaling boat, now I also have a criminal record. So I will always be an immigrant with Iranian passport, which is getting uglier and uglier, and a friend of mine made a cake and put her passport on it, because it is a piece of cake, that passport, really. You can't do anything with it. Milan gave me so much opportunity, and I was not so proud, but I was a model for a long time. I had a burnout, I got a disease, I was eating and vomiting 4 times a day. But what I learned in this industry is the power of storytelling, the power of showing people just a dream, and they will be following that dream in masses. And I think everything happened to me here, you know, how I broke and how I kind of rebirthed from that broken, fragile thing out of Iran, and how I reconstructed myself as an Iranian that is in a mission, as Johanna says, in the world. I have a very love and hate relationship with Milan. But I'm not here for the moment. I'm based in Iceland, trying to save the whale. It's been 3 years. Yeah, I hope it finishes as fast as possible.
Am I supposed to answer the question about Milan? It's not by choice, I can tell you that. Watching my sons, taking them to school and picking them up, and I just look at them, I can't just cry like I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. You know, I look at my childhood back home, it was the most amazing thing ever. And I know in Italy it is like this, but I just don't know what I am supposed to do in a small town in Tuscany, or somewhere even further away from going back home or traveling. So I don't know. I pray and hope that they will come, that I hope it's before my kids are not too old, you know, but I travel. But anyway, just about the storytelling, I just want to say thank you back to you, because you truly inspired me as well, and it's amazing to hear, you know, there is so much hope in the world, to know there is an amazing woman like you doing what you do, though. No, but for real, because people often ask, like, yeah, but how can you stay positive? And I'm like, because we have to hold on to this, that now, you know, that you do what you do, and you are that well aware, and you know all of this. This is so important, you know, and you're a woman, so you are also paving the way. I know this is not easy in Italy, you know, like, because being an Icelandic woman, and I compare how it is to be a woman here, and I'm just like, wow, this is like so back in the days. And it's 2025, and this is a whole country in Europe. How come we can't break these old ways to be? So just thank you, back to you, for being an inspiration.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the events, very nice, very strong. I think that in Iceland, nature is so strong, difficult, wild, amazing, because you have you can watch the iced snow and the green sky while you are traveling in the ring road, and you lost the road because the car is parking over there, and you have to walk and to see this magic situation. The nature is so strong that teach people stronger, better than any other coaching PNL open mind course or class school. In Italy, the mindset is opposite in respect of Scandinavian countries. This is the problem. I think you have to break the head to open the mindset with four generation of yes, it's very difficult because here private rights arrive before public areas. In Iceland is opposite. That's it.
Yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, I mean, because it's like here, I feel like, you know, even at the school, because being a mom, you get to know the society a little bit differently than before I was a mom. So now I get like to see deeper inside the circle. And I feel like, you know, this change is so difficult because they don't want to change. But there are many people who do want to change. Wait, I lost my train of thought. This is totally left. Where was I?
You can use coaching. You can use your coaching.
Yes, exactly. I should. But anyway, I guess it was not that important. Oh, mamma mia. Yeah. I lost it anyway.
You can use Iceland knowledge to...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, that comes back to being here, you know, like, as a mom, also, just to let my children be, you know? Like, I want them to survive without me present. That's the goal. It's not to make them completely depending on me. Well, I'm going to burn out and get exhausted pretty fast. And they, what if something, God forbid, something happens to me, what are they going to do? You know? And so the point of raising kids is to give them tools so they can do things on their own as soon as possible. And it comes to Iceland, you know, the weather is so intense. Like going to school at 6 years old, my mom was just like, yeah, you walk, no way, I'm going to drive you. The weather is nasty, I'm not going out. And so, you know, I go with my backpack and like so well dressed, and just the wind is going like, when the snow, I can't see anything, and the snow is up to here. And then I'm like walking at 7 a.m. out, completely dark. And this taught me a lot, you know, it didn't do me any harm. I just got to school, I mean, very tired and so on. But, you know, then there would be a glimpse of a northern light above my head. You know, so it's like the weather is not an enemy, it's just dress smart. Water is not dangerous when they fall from the sky like it seems to be in cities. Like people like, oh my, you know, run away. I'm like, it's water just the same when you bathe on the beach in the summer. Same element, you know. So it's interesting, but the nature, the weather teaches us a lot, remaining open-minded and free, you know.
Thank you.
It's a question for Anahita. Nowadays, we're told that we need to love our neighbor, that we cannot change our neighbor. We just need to accept him as he is, or the person we love also. So how should we, artists and politicians and academic, change the situation and prompt change? That's one question. Just a remark, I would really advocate for Milan. Milan is a beautiful city. I mean, I'm fed up of listening to Milanese people. Of course, I'm an extracomunitaria, and as a foreigner, I really treasure the value of networking that is in the city. I was actually living in Sardinia and as in an island, trying to work for the ocean, blah, blah, and everything was managed from here. So many organizations just use beautiful places to as a showcase, you know, as a stage. So now Milan is beautiful, come on.
Yeah, somebody had to stand up for Milan. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for standing up for Milan, I know. And also, I think it was also really hard for me to know how I can do a change. You're talking about neighbors. I'm talking about going into a country as a foreigner and not a very beloved country. You know, Iran does not have a very good kind of history with the destruction that our government has done to the neighbors and to the nature itself. It's really hard to go to another country as an Iranian and tell them stop damaging the nature. But I think what I learned in fashion, what I learned during all the protests and the revolution that's happening in Iran, what I learned was that who holds the narrative of the majority of society has the power. So if you want to see a change, you have to work on storytelling. You have to work on changing the stories. Like our traditions used to be just one brilliant idea multiplied by time, and then that became traditions. Now we need new brilliant ideas multiplied by time to create next cultures and next traditions. I think if you look at the fundamentals of people's ideas and don't talk directly to them, but talk, you know, in a whole, and believe that if majority of people are against something, politicians will have to bend to that. I think that's the way to go. I hope I have answered your question. Thank you.
Hi. I actually have two questions for you. And one is, what's the carbon footprint of whaling? And the second one is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, during the Cold War, both the Soviet Union and Japan were doing hunting whales illegally against international treaties while publicly supporting anti-whaling. And documents have been hidden for years and decades. And so that honestly kind of scares me. So do you think anything like that is likely to ever happen again? And if so, how can we prevent it?
Well, can I answer? Well, it's happening. It's not whales. It's happening. There's something that we called sea piracy. When you go to open waters, anyone can do whatever they want to do. And the bigger vessel that you have, the better you can just get out everything. When I was in Croatia, we were trying to work on the dead zones, dead seas of Mediterranean. And we could see Japanese vessels would come, they would hunt little tunas and keep them in a net, which was the farm basically, and then just be in the ocean all the way back to Japan for 6 months, hunting sardine and feeding them and making them really big and fat and then sell them with a high price back then. This is a piracy. Do you think this would be legal? But the laws are just protected on the borders, and we are supposed to protect 30% of our oceans by 2030. But in reality, it's less than 8% and on paper, and less than 0.0% in action, because there's no coast guards, there's no one actually checking. And when there's a place that is called, in case of Croatia and borders with Italy, when they announce some place, a protected area, actually fishermen go more and more there because they think there will be more fish there. So it's happening in a mass scale. If you look at bottom trawlers, the net is as big as a church that is destroying the waters right now. It's so much more damaging than actually killing whales. I mean, we try to save the whales, and that saving the whales is symbolic, you know, that we have to protect the oceans and we have to care for it. But it is getting better. And it is getting better because of storytellers, because of the activists, because of young people that had it enough that, okay, you're destroying our future. And it is getting better. You know, like Paris Agreement was a win for everyone. And now we have to put more pressure to see it actually happen. And I believe it will happen. I think there's a threshold and a fight that the system doesn't want to bend, but it will have to bend to the will of the power. Just to stand on the right side of history, just believe. And there's a say in Iran that from Shamlu, our beloved poet, that he says, you don't need to fight the darkness, you just need to not help it. So if you stand with the truth, I think we will win this. It will work.
Hi, my name's Grace, and I just want to first say I'm so inspired by you women. Like, this has been such an enjoyable listen and watch. And my question is kind of on the, when you said creativity is a tool for change, which I completely agree with. And, you know, creativity is about imagining the future and everything. So, when do you think your movement for whaling is going to stop being a change, but an actual movement where it's the norm? Like, when and how do you think you'll get to that point? And are you just kind of in the moment of making this being a change?
Well, thank you for your question. I mean, I think we've done everything that we could do. We managed to, because there was a problem when we started 3 years ago, the majority of Icelandic people were pro-whaling because they had the wrong narrative that this is the symbol of our independence and nobody is allowed to tell us what to do. But we managed to change that. Now the majority of Icelandic people are against it. There is, I think, 55% against it. And then there's a huge, like 30% are don't care. And there's like a little percentage that are pro-whaling. I think now it's the work of women like you. I don't know her name. What's your name? Chiara. We need the constitution to change. We had a successive Svandis, the minister back then 3 years ago, she put a pause on whaling because we proved that whaling is against animal welfare laws because there's no way that you can humanely kill a whale. But unfortunately, in constitution, the right of a man to have a business stands above the right of the nature and the right of animal welfare laws. So we need the constitution to change. We need people to push for that at this point. And we need something that's called rights of nature. And we need ecocide to be able to hold accountable the people who are damaging the environment. And I think we are kind of close to that. There's a bill right now that is going to go out in public in parliament in fall. Which is our hope. I mean, we lobbied politically so much to get to this point. You know, all the people that Johanna was in contact with. I mean, she looks such a humble woman, but she's a powerhouse. Behind the doors, she opens all the doors with phone calls and stuff. And I think not long. We're hoping that next year will basically be the end of it. Yeah.
Grazie. I think first there was one question regarding the whales and the CO2 sequestration. So I just want to answer, if I may, on that question, on the importance of whales on that aspect as well. And there's that equation from Raf Chami on the importance on the whales on and the actual value of whales. If you take a dead whale, basically on the market, it's somewhere around $50,000 or something. So it's not really on the fish market, if you think of that. If you take just the value of the whale through his lifetime, which is like estimated maybe 30 years, and the amount of CO2 that's sequestered by the whale, and the importance of the whale on their on the blooming, when they poo, creating all the phytoplankton, which basically is giving us to breathe. Because in the high seas, there's a huge lack of nutrients, and especially it's iron too that is dissolvable in water, that basically makes that whole blooming action. The value of that whale goes up to, on the current CO2 market, to more than 2 million. So even from a pure economic perspective, it's completely stupid, right? And so it just doesn't make sense from any perspective. But besides that, that was just to answer a question. I'd like to thank Elizabeth, seriously, on behalf of One Ocean, to organize this panel. I think it was, and to Joanna and to Anita, I think it was really amazing. I was a bit blown away because of the way, in a simple way, but you're putting it like very, very deep concepts into everything what we are doing as well as a foundation. And I think it comes down to storytelling. And I think also from a legal perspective, thanks for your input. It took us almost like, I think, more than 20 years to get this law of the high seas together from the United Nations to try to regulate on what's happening outside on these international waters, which is still sort of, pirate area. And, we didn't touch on topics like deep sea mining, which is horrific. We know so little still about all that environment. We know from a scientific perspective, we know maybe 5% of what's happening in the ocean. We are talking about the area that hosts 80%, more than 80% of our biodiversity. And yet, we keep repeating the same mistakes humanity has done over the past 200 years on land, because we are land animals. And we try to basically replicate the same things in the sea. So, from a talking a lot with scientific community, it gets really hard to be sort of optimistic. But I think, and I appreciate that the message is optimistic. And when we listen to leaders like Sylvia Earle, getting into her 90s, and then every speech, she actually, you can see the glitter in her eyes, and she says, "Look, we're." It's an amazing opportunity that we're having right now that humanity has never had, because we never knew that much, even if it's only 5%, but we never had that scientific evidence of all the actions that we are causing, the error. And once you're aware, it should be logic to stop, right? Or to make it turn around. And so, anyway, I don't want to make a monologue here, sorry, but you get me going. Also on the storytelling, I think, we just have to be aware what's coming up with AI as well. On one hand, yes, opportunity. On the other hand, it's scary that you have, for the first time in humanity, you have actually some non-living being as a storyteller, which is crazy if you think about it. So anyway, I hope this was... No, I'm sure it was. It was super insightful. It was very inspiring. We'll follow you for sure on everything that you're doing. And I think the big message is we're all connected. So whatever you do, don't feel alone. We're a huge community, and I think we just have to get our act together and speak the same language and listen more to native communities, learn from them how they protect, how they. Just one last example that was for me an eye-opener, since we work also on areas that we want to have as marine protected areas, like the Canyon of Caprera in the Mediterranean. And talking to Maori, a Maori leader last year that we invited for our summit, she said, we're spread all over the Pacific. The way we're looking at marine protected areas, they should be moving with the whales, which obviously makes sense, right? they don't stop in front of your geographic area where you're protected the area ends. But that's how we approach it still, right? We have these geographic areas in the sea which don't make real sense. I mean, it's like complete nonsense. And so I think there's so much to learn of what we lost over the past, whatever, 500 years probably from indigenous people. So I think if there would be like a learn book, like what you're doing with your kids, I think it's amazing. And I think we just really read that script, every one of us, to really try to look in a brighter way to the future. So thank you very much.
No, thank you for the information.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing. Like now on Monday, I'm flying to California to accompany indigenous leaders, the son of Benki Pianko, who will take over from Benki Pianko. There is a gathering called Aniwa with 40 indigenous leaders and elders from all over the world where they come together for the past like 9 years. They meet once a year and it's a summit, so it's both a cultural exchange. People come there and they can listen and learn to all the different lectures and so on. And then as well, for, you know, they change their information. It's so beautiful to see, you know. They all come, you know, from all the different places of the world, but how they come together, how they share and honor and respect each other knowledge. It's such a beautiful example to see, like how we don't, you know, back here, we look at each other and we kind of, you know, especially in like fashion cities like Milan, you know, you get scanned like from top to toe what you're wearing and, you know, but it's just how we approach one another, you know. How are you? Not like, of course, it's beauty because here is so much beauty being born and spread, of course, all over the world. But it's just interesting to ask, like, how are you? Would you ever answer how you are? When it's nice to see them, how they exchange, you know, in these gatherings. So that is a good hope, you know, that they are coming together, they are fighting, and their voice is being spread. There are more people like you, like you, like you, like you, like everybody, you know. We have to just go out there and create this massive ripple effect, you know, because we can, even if it's going to just delay. But there are many things that could happen, you know, if you think about it. It could become a force from another planet, you know. You never know what can happen that is going to... Or when, as you said, it's only 5 to 7% of the oceans that we know. It's, you know, it blows my mind. Like, what can we find in there that we don't know about? Like, a whole world. Like, who says mermaids are not real? I mean, why not? You know, if we know so little about the ocean, maybe, you know, there is some rescue. Then maybe there is a team, mystic team down there that just needs to appear. I don't
solve
know.
The
I like
of
to
the
believe
land.
In these things. There's an easy
recipe, right? Huh? As you said before, when you were asked, there's an easy recipe on rescue. Yeah. But it's going to happen without us, so.
It's going to, I mean, I don't think we can at this point. But
at least the indigenous people would deserve to stay.
Yes, I agree with that highly. And they tell the story of, you know, Amazon is on fire, the jungle is on fire, and there is a little hummingbird who goes into the water and goes in, you know, one drop comes out, and, you know, all the animals are helping and doing what they can, and the elephant takes, like, so much water. And then he's like, oh, that's sweet, you know, that you keep going, like, backwards, at least... I mean, it looks like we are going to die in this fire, but I cannot die with that in my conscience that I didn't do the best I could, because the best I can, even if it's that tiny drop, it makes a difference. So,
well, in laws of civil disobedience, you don't need the you don't need all the people to change. You need only 5% of the society to change. That's why I'm hopeful that we can do this. I think we already have the knowledge. Majority of people know what is the right path to go. It's just a matter of time that they feel empowered enough to do it. And AI, I mean, like, I talk with my ChatGPT a lot, and we had like a deep conversation about the future of AI and how we can use it. I mean, at least for the moment, it's such a democratic power, as much as it could be used with like for fascism and to control more and more people, still it's a tool that we can use as well. And it was funny that I was telling ChatGPT that give me the worst possible thing that can happen and then give me also the solution how to stop it. Of course, we all know what is the worst thing that can happen. But the solution was that for all the groups of activism to understand that genocide, ecocide, women's rights, gender equality, all of that, it's one fight. And we have to somehow, beside the things that we do locally, we have to be connected globally. And we know that we have one enemy and we're many. So that's what AI said, so I don't know. Yeah, and well, these are our personal social medias. Last Whaling Station is the international movement. Kvala Vini, which means whale friend, and Johanna is the board member, is the Icelandic movement that's happening. And this is the QR code to our last civil disobedient action. We are writing bad reviews for the restaurants that are serving whale meat. Of course, they try to bring down all of our comments. Now our next phase is to send them a mass email to Google and TripAdvisor and show their hypocrisy, show that they're censoring the real information and that they're protecting basically ecocide with what they're doing. So we're using AI, so it's auto-generated emails and auto-generated comments. It's just few clicks. There are three restaurants, but in both Google Map and TripAdvisor. Either you can do that or you can just click on the first link and send the email to Google and TripAdvisor and shame them for the hypocrisy. Thank you.
Thank you both for this insightful and deeply inspiring conversation. We are navigating very challenging times, and I'd like to invite each of us, speakers and audience alike, to reflect on what we've heard and witnessed today, to slow down, to reconnect with our essence, with nature itself, to remember that we are part of both above and below, and most importantly, within. Thank you once again, Johanna and Anahita, for your wisdom, courage and presence. And thank you to the One Ocean Foundation for making this gathering possible. We will close this talk with a video message of Dr. Jane Goodall. Please enjoy.
Dear President Thomas Dodd, dear Prime Minister Benedictson, and dear Mr. Gunnarsson, my name is Jane Goodall, and I've dedicated my life to the conservation and welfare of wild animals, well, and captive ones too, but particularly in the wild, chimpanzees, and more recently, elephants, pangolins, dolphins, and whales. Throughout my lifetime, I've witnessed a major shift in our attitudes towards animals. In 1960, when I began my chimpanzee studies, many scientists believed, or said they believed, that animals couldn't suffer or experience emotions, and that their behavior was governed purely by instinct. I was told I couldn't talk about chimpanzee personalities, minds, or emotions, because those were unique to us. However, because chimpanzees are our closest living relatives, biologically, we share 98.6% of our DNA with them, and because so much of their behavior is so similar to ours, science gradually admitted that we humans were not, after all, separated from the rest of the animal kingdom. And this led to many scientific studies of animal behavior, which all resulted in the fact that we are part of and not separated from the amazing animal kingdom. Scientists, policymakers, and the public now acknowledge that so many species are thinking, feeling beings. In other words, they're sapient and sentient. This, of course, has raised many ethical concerns regarding the way we treat animals. And this includes, of course, the hunting of whales. Years of research confirm that whales are large-brained, very intelligent, and very social mammals, with complex means of communicating, including over very long distances. They form unique cultures and lasting and very strong bonds between family members and the individuals making up a group or pod. Moreover, individual pods have their own cultures. In addition, of course, they play a vital role in maintaining a healthy marine ecosystem. When whales are hunted, they are killed by firing a harpoon with a tip which explodes on entering the whale. This certainly doesn't guarantee a quick death, and indeed, many of those not killed immediately suffer slow and agonizing deaths. Today, only a few countries permit whaling, and public opinion has changed considerably as awareness of the cruelty of this practice increases. And this, of course, as you know, includes many people in your own country. I've been to Iceland, and I was captivated by its beauty. So I'm truly saddened by the number of people who've told me they will never go to Iceland because of the whaling. So they're depriving themselves of beauty and depriving the government of revenue. I should add that whale watching is a growing attraction for tourists, and this can also bring in significant revenue for the government. For these reasons, I beg that you will use your positions to help end whaling practices in Iceland. Thank you.
As we come to a close, may the voices, stories, and silences you've heard continue to ripple long after this moment. May they remind you, as the light slowly returns, that you are part of the living web, listening, remembering, and moving through the world with care. Until we meet again, may you walk gently in deeper alignment with all that is above, below, and within.